everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Fade podcast for March 2017. I'm your host, Jonathan Butrin, and I'm joined once again by the King of Snark, Tim Nelson.
What's happening? I guess I found that out. I am the King of Snark.
Yes.
Because I helped a little...
On the live tweeting of the Oscars,
yeah.
I tweeted throughout the Oscar broadcast as Cinema Faith, and Tim supplied me with all of the snarky tweets through text.
So if
so
you have
thank
a,
you for that.
A bad person you know, like John does, and you need to like tweet, that's just go to that bad person. They've got, I'm sure they've got lots of negative things
yes.
to say.
Yes,
so
exactly.
I supplied that for the for John. John's a positive
appreciate
kind
that.
Of guy.
Well, you know what I was thinking, Tim, and I have not officially asked you this, so I'm going to spring this on you. What if next year together for the Oscars, you and me and our co Cinema Faith creator Dan Baker get together
yes.
and we have like the tweet fest of the century. Like it'll be bigger than the Oscars. People will start tuning in just to hear our tweets. They will forget about the show.
I
it'll
love
be
it.
Great. So I'll do all like the truthful, sentimental stuff. You'll be Mr. Snark and then
good cop, bad cop, Dan.
Yeah. And Dan will just be the Twitter boss because that's what he is. That guy's like his second language is Twitter. He's incredible.
I click on a lot of his stuff.
Oh, yeah. He just knows how it... I mean, like 95% of our tweets on Cinema Faith are Dan Baker, everyone, because that guy just knows how to do it.
And Dan's a good guy. Designed yes. the website, is that right?
He did. He designed the website. He's the co-creator of Cinema Faith.
He's couldn't like getting a huge shout-out tonight. I
yeah.
don't know if he... I think he probably will appreciate
it. I think he's
it.
A listener. Yeah, I think...
Maybe.
Hopefully.
Maybe. He's a contributor, isn't he?
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
There you go. Read Dan's stuff.
Uh-huh. So next year. So you're committing. You have to commit right now. You good?
I'll do it.
All right. Boom. You heard it here first. So speaking of the Oscars, Tim, which film won Best Picture? Because I got confused at the end there. Do you remember what...
Oh man, we're gonna wade into that, huh?
Yes.
So you want to talk about it?
Well, for those of you who have been living on a rock and just came out to listen to our podcast, hello, welcome. You missed a little bit. There was just a slight snafu at the end of the show for Best Picture, where La La Land was announced as the winner, and we all groaned collectively. And I sent Tim a text like, whatever. But not that's mean because at the end of the day, and I feel a little bad for this because La La Land's kind of getting thrown under the rug on this. It is a great movie, and I think we all would have been okay with it winning. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's a decent film.
Yeah, it's a decent film. But anyway,
we both gave it an A, didn't we?
We both gave it an A.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely
it will be here at award season. It
yes,
was here.
Yes. But it actually turns out that the producer of La La Land came running to the microphone and said there's been a mistake, and in fact Moonlight was the real Best Picture winner. And so all the cast of Moonlight got up there and it was just a big mess, and we were sort of in shock for about 2 hours afterwards, and that's what happened. So
it's like
it was kind of
it was like the Super Bowl this
it,
year.
It was
like the same. Like you're like, oh, okay, well, I can stop watching, and then what?
Yeah, they're coming back. Here it comes. It was kind of one of those once in a lifetime events of the Oscars. It was crazy. Initially, I blamed Warren Beatty, like, because it looked
Me
like
too.
He just read it wrong and
like
then lied about it, saying that it was the Best Actress thing. I'm like, dude, don't. Just stop. Own up
I
to
like
it.
To blame old people.
Tim Nelson.
Well, you know, and I'm becoming an old person
yeah,
pretty
yeah.
quickly.
So you
here.
Can almost speak from experience.
Well, it's going to be great when I can go, oh, I'm sorry that I did this.
Uh-huh.
I'm old.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But in fact,
first...
it was not his fault.
Yeah.
We have to clear up the air because, in fact, the accounting firm made a mistake and did give him the Best Actress card, and he really didn't know what to do.
So
and I don't know if I would have known what to do.
Did they fire those guys?
Yes. Apparently, they're not renewing the contract with them. That's what I heard. I hope that was a correct story. Sorry if I'm wrong on that, but I did hear something of that nature.
Wow.
Which, yeah, I don't know. But poor Warren Beatty, he was just sitting there, standing there, staring at the card, and he didn't know what to do. We thought he was milking the suspense, but in fact, he was like, you know,
totally confused.
Totally confused. And that's what happened. But, you know, so there's some people who are like, okay, can we stop talking about this? It happened. Move on, you know. But I think the thing that's kind of troubling a lot of people and what I've been reading is that, you know, Moonlight happens to be the, let's see, the first all-black cast movie to win an Oscar, which is a pretty big moment.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And they're just kind of right in that moment and in all the days and weeks up until right now, no one can talk about that win without talking about La La Land. And I guess for some people, it just feels like kind of a weird metaphor for life, you know, as a black person in America. But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought you both, you and I predicted Moonlight.
We did. We did predict Moonlight. And, well, I don't know if I would have predicted it if I had to put money on it. I would have said that La La Land was probably going to win, but I did want Moonlight to win very badly because I did think it was the best movie of the year. So I think justice was served.
So I didn't see it till real late, but I did see it in the theater.
You did? Okay.
Because it had like, the initial run was like 4 days in a theater that you can never go to. Like, honestly, the time was 4 p.m.
Yeah.
On a weekday, I could go see Moonlight. And I'm like, how am I going to do that? It's like not even possible.
And then they brought it all back for around the war season, which is great. I'm glad you were able to catch it.
I got to the small theater, watched it on something slightly bigger than my TV.
And do you agree that was the best movie of the year?
Yeah, well, I'm a story guy. And so, yeah, I do think, like, did this show us something about humanity? Did this advance art?
Yeah.
Did this... I always think about like a PhD, like that you've changed the discipline, right? It's like now you have a philosophy of I mean, like...
I like that.
So I feel like, did this film change the discipline? Yes. Mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit about it. There was some things that, you know, we didn't podcast on it, we didn't get to get into it. But one of the things I think was it was just, there's a lot of things that the director did that were cool. Like we were talking about film stocks. They mocked film stock of three different types of film for each act.
Oh yeah. For the three different ages of this person's life, there was different film stock. Okay.
So that was cool. Obviously very powerful acting. The story is powerful. Yeah. People complained at some point with that film that there wasn't enough. Oh, I needed more details in there. Well, I was like,
I thought that was one of the beauties of it, was how just sparse it was. It was perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like an impression almost of this thing. Anyway, and just beautiful scenes, like when the I can't get the scene out of my head when in the first act where there's the guy that's a drug dealer that's kind of his surrogate dad is holding him in the water and like teaching him how to swim. It's just like one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And so that just sticks in my head, you know. And I'm like and they're both love stories. And stories about like, who am I going to be? Very different endings.
Identity with very different endings. You're right. Yeah. The themes are very similar in both of those. So it is fitting in a way that those two movies are talked about together a lot. They're both the two best movies of the year. They're thematically, they're similar. But yeah, I think ultimately the best film won, which was good. But it's unfortunate. It's an unfortunate that I went down that way. And overall, too, because I thought the Oscar broadcast itself was pretty exceptional this year. Like, I thought it was just a really good show. Jimmy Kimmel was great. The sketches worked. I felt like it was one of the best ones I've seen in a while. So it's a shame that it ended that way, but...
Yeah, it's too bad. They deserve to not have to be part of that controversy and not have to share anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Why, like, nobody in Best Picture, I don't care who you are. Mm-hmm. If you win that category, you shouldn't have to share that with anybody or have people think of you as sharing that with somebody.
Mm-hmm. But that's it. That's all she wrote on 2016. It's the Oscars are over and the year has officially come to an end, so we can now switch gears completely to a new year. So here we go, man. 2017, we are officially in it, and we are going to review our very first new release from 2017 today, which is the horror sensation Get Out.
Get Out.
Get Out. Yes, Get Out is our topic for the day. And this film has generated quite a lot of buzz in a short amount of time. I think what caught my attention was a stunning 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Do you see that? It has since...
It's down now.
It dipped to 99%, but come on, man. That doesn't happen. I mean, even La La Land and Moonlighter is like 93, 94.
So other people think it's good?
Yes.
Therefore, that's, it is good.
Yes. And that's what that means. I do want to give a PSA on Rotten Tomatoes. The higher the percentage doesn't necessarily mean the higher the quality of film. It means it is almost guaranteed the movie is good. This many percentage of people gave the movie at least a good rating, right? So which would be or higher.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So sometimes you could look at 99, 100% and think you're going to watch, like, oh, this must be a masterpiece. It's just saying...
Everybody thought it was a B.
Everyone thought it was at least a B. Yeah, right, yeah, yeah, right, right. So it's good to know. But
that's nice. I didn't know still, that.
Yes. But anyway, so I was intrigued about the percentage, and then I read the plot synopsis, and I got really intrigued because, let's go ahead and describe what this movie is about in short. I know you hate doing plot synopsis. So
I love it. I can't do it myself. I'd like to be able to. I'm not very good at that stuff.
Well, I'll take it. But, okay, so basically, I mean, at the end of the day, Get Out is a horror movie about racism, which puts it in some pretty unique territory. Specifically, it's about a black man named Chris and his white girlfriend, Rose. And Rose wants to take Chris to introduce him to her parents. And she doesn't tell them that he's black because she says it shouldn't matter and her parents are cool. Her dad would vote for Obama a third time, you know, if he could, right?
Yeah.
And so they go to meet the parents and everything is cool. Except there's just some really weird, creepy stuff happening in the background. And Rose's parents have, like, two black servants who both act kind of strange.
Like zombies.
They're kind of like zombies. Rose's parents have friends over for a party who seem particularly insensitive to race relations and keep making these horrible comments to Chris. And
they're just straight weirdos.
They're just kind of weird people, yeah. And yeah. So all in all, things start to snowball until eventually all hell breaks loose and we finally see what's going on, which is very sinister indeed. And that is the premise of Get Out. So it's a film that wears its racial commentary on its sleeve in the form of a kind of a horror comedy, which is really no small feat. That's pretty impressive. So, Tim, what did you think? Do you think that this premise could have come out 10 years ago, that a movie like this?
I've never seen it before, so yeah. It's hard for me to answer that.
Yeah, it's a tough question.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if it would have gotten the reception it's getting with the positive reviews in the box office if we weren't kind of primed. You know what I mean?
I think some of the imagery you couldn't, because there's images, and we could talk more about this, that are drawn directly from the last probably 4 years.
Yeah, exactly.
That you can't, that have new meaning, that they couldn't have used those same images in this film 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I also think, yeah, so I would say at least that much, mm-hmm. right? So it is like, there are lots of allusions to recent history.
Yep.
But that said, like, I think there's a lot of allusions to all kinds of history.
Even film history.
Film history. Yeah, this film, yeah, we can get into, I don't know what you want, you know, where do you want to go with this first? I have all kinds of thoughts that aren't original, but like, that I go, oh yeah, when I've heard other people talk about this film.
Well, let's start with the directing. So the movie is directed by Jordan Peele, and he is most known for his work with his partner Keegan-Michael Key. Yes, and they have the show called Key and Peele, they have a lot of cool bits coming from that. A few friends have forwarded me stuff from them, and it's pretty funny stuff. And Peele's also a Mad TV alumni, so he's mm-hmm. kind of known for classic sketch comedy. And his father is black and his mother is white. I read that. Did you know that?
Yeah.
So he's a son of an interracial marriage, so that may have or may not have played into some of the social commentary in the film. But so let's talk about the writing and directing. I love the way the movie opens. Do you remember the opening scene?
Yeah.
Yes. So normally in horror movies, we have this character kind of wandering around like a creepy house or a farm or like a campground. You know,
they're trying to get something. To escape something. Yeah, usually, yeah. Right?
So how does this movie open, Tim?
So I now think I know how it opens, but it basically opens with a guy who's in this beautiful, idyllic suburb that mm-hmm. has like these overgrown trees. It kind of looks like Wisteria Lane.
Yeah.
And he's on his cell phone. He's like frantic, African American dude. He's got a hooded sweatshirt on, and he's like super nervous. The suburbs are like wigging him out, and it's like he's panicked that something bad's going to happen. And there's a car kind of creeping on him, following him
with this creepy music from like that's like bebopping from the 40s. It feels like
that music is in something else. I looked for it online. I could not figure out what it was. It might be drawing me into it might be drawing us into another film, but I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. And so he's scared of the suburbs, and he actually has reason to be, because he's abducted by this guy in the opening scene with his car, and it's creepy. And so it's just kind of a great scene to set the tone and introduce this race element. And I would say the next hour is like really compellingly written and directed. I love the way the characters all seem harmless, and then bit by bit we just start noticing this weird stuff.
Yeah. So that first scene is like really crude. You know, I'm like a first scene dude.
You're always about the first scene. Yeah. So what does that mean to you?
So people, they did interviews, and basically they were asking like, what was this about? And a lot of people have said this is like a Trayvon Martin illusion.
Mm.
It's like a guy in a hooded sweatshirt. who is afraid to be in the suburbs because he knows that, like, something bad could happen to him and there'd be no recourse, nothing he could do about it. And so it's like he is a terrified guy in the suburbs. And so that a lot of people are like, well, that's directly alluding to and with the hooded sweatshirt and everything, they're like, oh, here's what's going on. Hmm. Which I thought was kind of interesting. And I think that that was kind of to spark us on, kind of mess with us a little bit.
Right from the start. Exactly.
And so say, hey, you know, what are you afraid of?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of interesting. It's a so there's two, there's gore, like kind of horror, and then there's you, and you're more into horror movies than I am.
I am. Yes. You're not a huge horror fan.
No.
Yeah.
I like some suspense and I like some stuff if it's like way over the top gore where you're like I like a movie that's like where you're cutting zombie heads off and stuff like that, like in a competition with your buddy. Like I can get into that a little bit cause it's so absurd, but like just straight gore, I can't get into. Like to me, it's kind of like, it's just boring.
What if it's a terrifying movie? Like a really pulse pounding movie. Do you get
so
into
I like
that?
Like The Shining.
Yeah. The Shining. Right.
Like that would be an example of a horror movie that I think is excellent. Yeah, and I like ones that kind of mess with our that are psychological, like kind of thrillers. It's kind of on the border of horror movie and maybe not. So I thought it was pretty. I thought this is a pretty well written movie. It's this. This is almost like it does tension in the beginning and gore in the end.
Yeah, right. And that's why it feels a little bit like two halves to me. And there might be some spoilers thrown around here, and you're gonna have to forgive us for that, but I feel less enthused about the second half because I feel like there's a point where we finally start to get what's going on, and the movie switches in my mind from something that's really kind of more subtle and clever commentary on race, and at the same time being just a really effective horror comedy, and then transitions into something that feels really like boilerplate cliche horror movie with these kind of over the top characters and, you know, just kill everyone as the solution basically. Yeah.
Yeah. I think at some point you got to flip the switch on the suspense because you could keep it going and keep it going and keep it going, but you have to resolve that tension at some point.
Yeah. But do you have to basically make all of your characters who are at once like, ooh, are they good? Are they bad? Just like, oh yeah, they're just total psychopaths. I mean, isn't there a point where it's a little lazy? Like, you know, I don't know.
I liked it.
You liked it. Okay. That's good. No.
So, and for me, like, I think there have been some pretty astute reviewers saying, like, here are the influences of this, or here's what this reminds me of. And so, like, you know, the first one, which is the first one I got when I was in there, and I'm not like, you know, I don't know a ton about this stuff, but was the Guess Who's Coming to Dinner illusion.
Sidney
so
Poitier.
Like, yeah, it's a 1967 film. Mm-hmm. It's a classic film, and you know you should watch it if you get a chance. And if you haven't seen it yet,
I haven't seen
come
it.
Come on, man!
It's so terrible.
Get with it. Get with it.
I know.
You know we got to get you
it's
a gift card to Amazon or something.
Dude, for real.
Get you watching the classic films. So anyway, and that's like a very similar plot line. It's a black guy who's been invited to, I think it's his fiance in this case.
Okay.
To meet her parents, and it's all this awkwardness ensues, but the idea is like what it's like for his experience and like how uncomfortable that is and how exposing, and also there's a bunch of junk that goes along with that. But that's like the first really obvious solution in the film, and then the other one would be like Stepford, which is another
Stepford
classic
Wives.
One okay. that we've probably most of us seen the remake of, Stepford
yeah,
Wives.
With the Nicole Kidman, yeah.
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 So the idea that like there's this community out there that has people who are like mind controlled into servitude.
Yes.
So that's another one that people have said. But the one that I think, I'm sorry, I'm all into this part.
Do it.
The one that I think, I don't know if he even intended it to be like this, but there's a film that has been called by critics the Citizen Kane of horror, which is called The Wicker Man.
Oh, the original,
the
I hope.
Original.
Not the Nicolas Cage one, which is probably one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, you can't remake that movie. It was like, it's 70s, and it's the experience of this guy. You should, I think it's on Netflix.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, just to warn viewers out there, there's nudity and like stuff like that. But well, I guess there's probably a lot of films that we've probably reviewed. But this one is considered like to be true. Like it has this awkward feel, and it's considered to be like almost like it sparked its own genre. And so this film is totally within that vein. That film is a guy who's a Christian that goes to this isolated island off of like maybe it's Wales or something, somewhere in the British Isles. And he goes there, and he's an investigator. He's investigating things. And it turns out that they have gone from their Christian practices, and they've reverted back into pagan rituals, including sacrifice.
Ooh.
So like they, yeah, it's like they have, and so like they're doing maypoles, but they're trying to hide that from the outside world. And yeah,
sounds good. Sounds much better than the Nick Cage one. God. Yeah, you should look. There's like worse scenes of that movie. You can YouTube it. There's one where Nicolas Cage is running around in a bear suit and then drop kicks this old woman. It's just. You can't make it up. It's,
I
kind of
want to see the Nick Cage one better because, like, I'm describing something that's kind of heavy. You're like Nick.
Oh, it's really funny. Yeah, like I think inadvertently. No. I think they were really going for horror. It is inadvertently one of the funniest movies I've ever seen.
Gosh, I've got to look that up. Like you really should. Now.
But yeah. I want to check out the original because that sounds a lot better. Do you remember? Is there is it a female run society? Because that's the direction they go in the remake. But it doesn't sound like that's what it
no.
Is
it's more. There are females, like the key, the whole thing is, I think, like a virgin sacrifice.
Oh, okay.
And so like there are elements of that, but it's been like probably 3 years since I've seen it.
Yeah. But I could totally see how that would be related to Get Out because mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like the idea is they go to this island, the protagonist in that one, where people do everything differently and it's kind of evil.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have this guy who leaves the city, goes to like the countryside,
yeah,
and everything they do is evil. Or maybe it's not. And, right. There's the key to the whole movie, the tension part is there's the ambiguity going, are these people good people or bad people? Am I going too far and maybe like reacting too much to these folks?
Yeah.
Are they well-meaning, but they are expressing themselves in strange ways?
Which is what's so genius about the first half of this movie. Exactly.
Yeah. And it also like, you know, gets a person to, I mean, when you're in these movies, like I think you see the character questioning if they are in touch with reality or not.
Mm.
And I think that's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
So like, hey, everything around me seems weird. Am I in touch with reality?
Is it
me? Have I done
right.
something wrong?
Right.
Yeah. And, am I crazy?
Yep.
And so that you get that same kind of feel, you get that in Stepford too, where somebody is like questioning reality.
Yeah, and then even when something weird happens and they're like, okay, maybe I'm overreacting. Maybe there is a plausible explanation for this until it all kind of adds up to too much, right?
Right, yeah. Right. So you can only like go give somebody the benefit of the doubt like so many times, uh-huh. And then you're like, no, they're gonna kill that girl. Right?
Exactly.
They're a bunch of psychopaths. So, yeah, so I think that's, and then we're led on that same journey because we get mm-hmm. the same info that character is getting. Sometimes we get a little more,
mm-hmm.
But we're like, what the heck?
And I think what aids in the first half being so compelling is that the acting is really good, especially by Chris, played by Daniel Kaluuya, and Rose, played by Allison Williams. They have a really good dynamic that brings us in, like we're on board with them, their relationship, seeing things through their eyes, and they both give you really some layered performances. And then I thought Rose's parents were pretty okay too, at least in the first half. At least I fell for them and thought they were wonderful people.
They reminded me of you ever watched Family Ties?
No,
I was like, these are the Family Ties parents.
Yeah,
they're just like, I mean, that's not like their characters, but like they're like white liberals.
Who yeah,
are like warm,
yeah,
warm white liberals.
Yeah, we're totally cool, man. It's all good. Nothing to fear here, right? Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they really get you at the beginning, but I do. Yeah, I feel like just the problems with the second half is I feel like it's like the light switch flicks on, and then these characters go from just like, you know, one way to completely the opposite way. And I thought the worst part was Rose, like, this is spoiler alert, but you know, just how she had these kind of like dimensions in the first half, and then I just didn't buy her total switch into a cold-blooded psychopath. I don't know. Did you? It just, I don't know. I know what you're saying, that at some point you have to kind of go into full-on horror mood, but I've seen horror movies that kind of stay subtle throughout, and it's actually more, it's better.
Yeah, I think on this, it's like they either have to be completely crazy. Like, once you pull the switch and you're like,
yeah,
they are crazy, then you got to have them be completely crazy.
I guess.
No, I think that's, I think, I don't think there's a way around it. I mean, like, what would you pose would be the other way to do it?
Well, here's the thing that bothers me, and I know, like, you're not coming at it at things from a true horror, you know, love for horror. I love horror. Like I've grown up watching horror movies because, you know, I'm a 6 on the Enneagram and fear is our thing, and so like this is very cathartic for us to watch worst case scenarios.
I was actually thinking about you, like, you know, you're talking about being a 6, yeah, and I'm like, how does he not just hate this?
Yeah, I know. Well, no, like that, it's like cathartic because all in my head, whenever I walk into a party or something, I'm always thinking worst case scenarios, you know, like what if this happens and what if the guy comes in with the gun and, you know,
so it's this, like, is just like voicing your, yeah, it's your, just, like your normal thoughts.
Right, that's what horror movies are. It's like, so oh, this is like the worst thing way that could happen to someone. And it's like, oh, great.
So are you thinking like, well, I sure hope Tim doesn't have a basement full of graves right now?
No, no.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, it's just always with more relationships. It's more like, oh, you know, I hope Tim doesn't say, I don't want to do this podcast anymore. More man, I hate you.
Jeez,
that's the life of a 6. We're
terrifying.
Paranoid. Yeah, I know. But anyway, so horror movies, I always love horror movies. But like, we're in kind of a horror movie renaissance. That's what's so great about it. Like, this kind of started a few years ago. Well, even like the whole horror movie coming out in March, that started 2 years ago with It Follows. It Follows came out about 2 years ago in March, and that was
such a fanboy.
I love that movie.
I haven't seen it yet, so.
And what's that?
I keep putting it.
You haven't seen it still? I like tell you almost every time we get together to watch
it. I keep putting it in my list, and I'm like, don't want to watch it.
Please watch it. Not only is that movie genuinely scary? I wouldn't even call Get Out scary.
I don't like being scared.
What's wrong with being scared?
It's freaky.
Anyway, but it also has a very subtle, there's a lot of subtext to it, and it stays that way throughout the whole thing, even when things get intense. So I'm saying there's a way to do it without it feeling like kind of B-movie exploitation, which I feel like kind of it crosses over into that territory in the second half. Go ahead.
So I watched a documentary, and it said the horror movies are constantly evolving. More than any other.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Because you can't use the same thing like over and over again,
mm-hmm,
because it's not going to elicit the same fear. And so part of it is like you have to constantly change horror movies for them to work.
So did it say what transition we're
Well, they were talking, in? Well, no, but they were talking like, why couldn't you do a Freddy Krueger movie right now and have, yep, anybody care?
Yep.
You're
good
like,
point.
Well, it's not, because it's been done already. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and they tend to be pretty creative.
And that was huge back in the 70s and 80s. We had all those Jason movies and Freddy Krueger movies. That's what horror was, right?
Yeah.
And no one, yeah. They've even tried bringing it back. I think there was a new Jason like 3 years ago, and no one watched
it. So the movie that changed everything, according to this documentary, I can't remember the name. I'm sorry, listeners, that I don't remember the name, is Scream.
Oh, yeah.
And they said that changed everything. And then also the scary movies, like the comedy ones that were... It's okay. You don't have to like it.
Yeah.
But it did gross huge amounts of money.
Uh huh. The first couple, I guess.
I don't know how many there are. Yeah.
Oh, there's tons
of them. I'm referring to just the first one.
Yeah.
But apparently that changed. That went. I mean, those things were like really struggling for audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Scream came out, it kind of reinvigorated. And it was in the mid 90s or something.
Well, and I guess, you know, having not seen the documentary, but Scream would have ushered in kind of a time where the movie is sort of like what Get Out is trying to do, where the movie was genuinely scary, but it was also genuinely funny and was kind of satirical.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there was kind of an era of that, and then Scary Movie was more on the comedy end. But then I feel like the era that we're kind of transitioning back into now is sort of, maybe it's going back, or is to just genuinely scary, you know, trying to recapture that, I don't know. That's what, if you're talking It Follows and Ty West movies and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess, so the question this to me that this would bring up is the Black experience a horror story in America? Like, by choosing this genre, he's asking that question.
Yeah.
He's saying, is our experience the same as the experience of Chris?
Hmm.
Is this our experience? Which I think is pretty, I mean, there's so many ways to spoil this movie right now.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to talk about it without spoiling it. It's okay. It's all right.
Yeah, I guess we got to, but...
We have to.
You know, but I would say, like, in the film, it's like this group of people want to basically use the bodies of Black men in order to basically thrive in whatever way they want to thrive. And the way they're going to do it is they're going to take out the brains of Black men and replace them with their own, and then basically exploit their bodies. And like that, if that's not like, if you can't see parallels to reality here, guys, maybe you ought to re-examine. I mean, this is a pretty serious film.
Yeah.
Like, it is a social commentary horror comedy movie.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I mean, I think it's a pretty big deal.
That's a big question. It's, you know, what's great about horror is that it's almost the only genre you can kind of pull this off without it being preachy or overly sentimental. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I just feel like there's something about horror where you can get away with a little more of serious subtext because, you know, you want to, as long as you genuinely scare people and give them a good ride, you can kind of get away with some going to some deeper places.
I also think, like, usually, like, a horror movie, like, plays off of, like, what you're, like, some, like, surface level fear that the culture is feeling right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, this movie's, like, really well timed, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I think, you know, why is this scary? It might be a better question. It's like, I wonder if anybody would find this scary anywhere else. Maybe not.
Yeah.
And it's not just scary. It's like deeply unsettling.
It is, for sure.
So scary, you know, you get scared by a lot of things, but this, like, you know, and they did, I love the production company. They have their thing where they show all the things that people normally get scared by. Did you see that in the movie?
No.
It's like a girl walking backwards real slow and jerky. And they had all these things that they use in every movie now.
Uh-huh.
But this movie is all about just super uncomfortable. Do I understand the other? Does the other understand me?
Yeah.
Who can I actually trust? Like, those are deeply unsettling things.
Which is pretty remarkable. Yeah. I mean, I was in a packed theater. That's the reaction I was sensing all around was kind of like, what is going on? Like, you just can't handle it. Like, you have to, right? Yeah. It's uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. So yes, there's a whole bunch of elements of the theme, I mean, that, you know, we could talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that this is a social commentary. It is asking these questions. I think it's interesting that of these folks, like, two that have vocations are both artists that have been targeted, which is interesting.
That is.
So the two black men that are being targeted by this group of weird, crazy cult in the country are artists. And Chris, the guy that, and they basically, they hold an auction for these guys.
They do.
I mean, come
it's
on.
It's bingo.
Come on,
it's
guys.
It's an auction.
But it's an for these guys' bodies.
Yeah.
And then one of the things I thought was interesting, because this also deals with appropriation. It's like, how are white liberals appropriating black culture when it's convenient for them? Mm-hmm. And I'm not, like, critiquing white, I mean,
yeah.
I'm not just taking a position against white liberals. I'm just saying, but that's what I see in this.
Yeah.
Is how are they appropriating culture? How are they using like black culture in order to kind of either make themselves feel better, or the guy that buys Chris's body wants his eyes because he has good art eyes. So it's like, I want to see things through your eyes. And that's like, so he purchases his body. So he basically is like deeply using him at a level that's like deeper than if it was something more. It's like he's taking his soul almost.
Hmm.
Did
you ever read Between the World and Me?
It's on my list.
It's really good.
Yeah.
But he always brings, you know, he talks about his experience growing up in Baltimore, and he brings everything about his experience with growing up as a black person in relation to his body. It's all about my body.
What's he say?
Well, that's basically, I wish I had like a quote offhand, but I was just thinking about that when you were talking, because it's like he uses that phrase, my body, to kind of describe all the assaults aren't just on him or it's on black bodies, which I think is really, it's profound. Yeah.
Well, look at, like, in the movie, there's assaults on his body. Some of them are small. So like people are touching him all the time.
Yeah.
And they're, oh, look how strong you are. And then people were talking about his genetic, like the brother-in-law or whatever, the character, the brother of the girl he's dating. She's like, oh, if you really worked it hard, you know, you've got the genetic makeup to really be a great UFC fighter or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're like, ugh.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But it's like, he's like looking at his body and like, what's funny to me is, so he cares. The dude has a camera in like every scene. I don't know if anybody asked him about photography at all.
that's a really good point. He's just at a party clicking pictures and no one like brings it up.
They're more interested in his blackness than in his photography, which I think is really funny.
Yeah, yeah. One scene that was really disturbing for me was the scene where Rose's mom hypnotizes him because so there's this whole thing about smoking and how like he has a bad habit of smoking, and she's like, well, I could take that away from you because I do hypnosis treatment, you know, for smoking. And then they and he's like, no thanks. He says no. And then they run into each other later that night. She's just, you know, creepy sitting on an armchair, and then she just goes for it. She just like says, oh, smoking's such a nasty habit, like really condescendingly, and then just launches into this hypnosis using a very painful memory of his to get there.
So even if she was just curing him of smoking,
yeah,
she basically said, I know what's better for you.
Exactly. And that's how it feels in that scene, yeah. Right?
And I'm going to fix you.
Yep.
And without his consent, without yep. him, he might want to quit smoking. He might not. Mm-hmm. But that's not her role, yep. is to fix him. That's like nuts. And then she tries to fix other things in him too.
Yep. You're right.
And I was just like, geez. So what I think is interesting is like that's clearly written out of some kind of experience. Because you can't, and that's too intimate to like yeah. just go, oh, yeah, this is an idea I had when I was like hanging out at a coffee shop. That's not yeah, what happened. Right, I mean, this right. is from real experience.
Yep.
And so you got to, yeah, so I think like that's an interesting position, right? It's like, oh, you know, are we fixers of things
mm-hmm.
and of people mm-hmm. and of... Anyway, she ends up trying to exploit him.
Yeah.
In the end.
But my favorite moment has to be towards the end. And we've already spoiled, you know, most of the movie, but this is the ultra, ultra spoiler alert. When Chris is killing his girlfriend on the side of the road, and he's covered in blood, and, you know, she's crazy, and he's choking her out, basically. And this cop car pulls up. Right? Flashing the lights. And there he is, you know, covered in blood, choking this white woman. And everyone in my theater groaned. Like, literally
yeah,
was like, oh.
Because it's like...
Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that so clever that he yeah. could elicit that reaction? It says everything about where we are. Yeah.
It's like, oh, wrong place, wrong time.
Right. And
who's going to interpret this in a way that's going to be fair to you?
I guarantee we wouldn't have that same reaction. If it was even a white guy choking a white girl, we would be like, well, I hope he explains it, okay? You know what I'm saying? But we know this is it. It's like case closed, you're
dead.
Not
only do we know, my thought would be that maybe we thought that.
What do you mean?
Maybe we had the thought like, well, if I were that cop and I saw this,
uh-huh.
I'd probably react this way. So as much as like I want to stand outside of that
yeah.
That racist idea, maybe that's part of me. Maybe that is my first thought when I saw that.
Yep,
and that's like a hard reality, but like I'd rather be honest about that than, you know, be like,
that's a really
of course
good
that
point.
Cop thinks that, you yeah, know? And yeah. I'm like, well, how would he know that? In my theater, yeah, people were totally like, oh, and I felt that was, I was like, oh crap, this yeah. is going to not go, yeah. this is not going to end good. This cop is not going to accept the explanation. There's,
but we do have to own yeah. that to an extent, because that's the reason we're having the reaction is we're standing outside going, oh, I would think this is a very terrible, you know, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I think different perspective, like depending on like your historical relationship with police. So, you know, he has a historical relationship with police that they form in this movie.
Oh, right. Towards the beginning, they have another encounter with a police officer.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And he's afraid to call the police when his mom dies.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, the idea is that he doesn't have a positive connection with police. And in fact, well, it's negative. And so like this, so the police, instead of being like the people that come save, like in a lot of movies like that I'm used to, and maybe the police, oh, the police get there. We're good to go now. Okay, good. It's all, it resolves. At that very moment, that's when it doesn't resolve. We're like, oh man, he would have been safe except that cop hadn't showed up.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So I think, yeah, it's, I mean, totally intentional. I thought that was like the twist in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that really cemented the social commentary.
Yeah. That's such a hard thing. It's one of the most brutal awakenings I had when talking to I live in a predominantly black neighborhood, but talking to people in my neighborhood about just not trusting the police and how different that was from my experience. I just assumed that the police were who you go to when you're in trouble and you just call 911 and it's that simple and they'll come to the rescue. But not having that trust is such a hard way to live. And that's the reality for a lot of people. Yeah.
Yeah. I love all the bizarre, like the movie's full of like the, what people call microaggressions.
Mm-hmm.
They're like these bizarre ones. Like the white people will be like, I know Tiger Woods. But before he says, he's like, "Are you into golf?"
Yeah.
Not at all.
He says
he's
it right
got a
up
camera
front.
Camera right there. Right? Yeah. Why is he asking about golf? He's got a camera. He's like, "You should really work on your swing." He's like, "I know Tiger Woods." And he's like, "Why did you bring that up?" And then the dad is talking about Jesse Owens.
Oh, yeah.
So remember he kicked Hitler's butt in the 30-whatever Olympics. And he's like, okay.
It's not good. Exactly.
There's a whole bunch of those, like just a ton of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's like they're really authentic because I've heard those ones. And like it's almost like the older the party guests get, the more nervous I get before they talk.
Yes.
So I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, those are funny because I'm totally guilty of a lot of them.
I know, me too.
They always are asking. They take the one African American dude like in the party, and they're like, "So, tell us about the African American experience. Was it good or bad?"
Right.
And it's like he doesn't even want to feel that he hands it to another guy.
He hands it to another black guy. He's like, "Why don't you?
Why don't you answer this?" And it was like, you know, I'm sure I've been guilty of doing similar things, and which is really kind of sad.
Yep.
But also, like to know like how awkward that is for someone. Yeah. This film gets you and kind of puts you in that situation. A lot of people already know how awkward that is because they live that every day, and it's beyond awkward. It's like awful.
Yep.
And it puts you in that same tension. I'm sorry. I got a lot of thoughts.
Go ahead.
On this.
Go ahead.
One of the things I thought was really interesting is the doctor basically is like lobotomizing these patients.
Yeah, yeah.
and the description is, "Oh, you'll be there, but you won't really be in control anymore. It's like you're observing your own self. It's like you're observing your life." And Chris, the character, calls it the sunken place. So it's like he's in his own body, but he's below it, so that he doesn't have control of anything, and he's almost like observing his life. And I think that's like a real place. I don't think that's just like for the film. Like to me, like the idea of like that somebody else is in control of your body, and this totally connects to your Ta-Nehisi Coates stuff.
Yep.
So it's like someone else is constantly in control of my body, and so I have to kind of disassociate a little bit. So that I can, for survival kind of, right? So I'm deep down in there somewhere, but I'm constantly modeling and code switching and I have to change constantly depending on who I'm around. Yeah. And so the point where like maybe you're sunken, you're so far below like what's perceivable and like your real self is so far below that it's like it's sunken.
It's you, but it's not really you.
Which is like super tragic.
Yeah.
Like if that's the social commentary, it's like saying a whole, you know, that the whole people group is sunken,
yep,
because of this jacked up, screwed up culture and historical white supremacy and all kinds of crazy crap that our country is like, you know, that's part of our history.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like really, it's like a very depressing comedy.
Yeah. But it's another sign of the movie's genius that we can that a horror comedy could be leading us to that deep reality, and it did. It does. Yeah.
It's a woke comedy is how somebody described it.
I like it.
Yeah. I'm like, "Oh, woke, okay." It's like a millennial.
Uh-huh. All right, Tim. So what are your final thoughts on the movie? Anything else you that stood out to you? Go for it.
I thought it was great. A lot of the commentators would say, well, the easy thing would do is like take some like Trump supporters and then like use them as villains. And what I liked is they took people that would consider themselves friendly, positive, at least initially, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who would say, "No, I'm down with this cause. I'm like, you know, I'm on the level here," whatever 70s stuff I'm talking. And then it actually turns out "Well, no, maybe actually you're doing more damage than somebody who's overt." And I was like, "Oh." So my final thought would be like, this is a hard movie for me to personally reflect on. Because if you're doing good reflection, it should ask you to maybe change some things about yourself, or at least maybe if you're not capable of that, to have ask somebody else to help you do that. So if you're willing to be vulnerable in this movie, I'm talking as a white male, if you're willing to, I'm speaking for all. No, I don't know. Speaking for myself.
Yeah.
If I, you know, the more vulnerable I'm willing to be in this movie and the more I'm allow like a movie like this to kind of critique me and my thoughts and my, where have I been, you know, been like this, I think it has a lot of power. And because it's not direct, like you said, it can really get under, it can get under your skin, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that is, I think it's kind of genius.
I think that's so important, because just to remember that, that sinking feeling you're getting as you're crawling in your seat and crawling out of your skin when they're making these comments, it's so easy just to say, oh, that's because these horrible people do things like that. But to realize that the reason I'm having that, you know, hair on my end reaction is because it's me. It's us. Yeah, We're all culpable. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we notice that in ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's pretty groundbreaking. Yeah.
You got a letter grade for us?
Yeah, I'd say it's like probably an A minus. The reason I would go minus is I think it's like definitely groundbreaking film.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say A minus because like there's technical feature. I don't think it's like so technically awe inspiring or anything. I mean, it's just not. The script, I thought the script was great. So from a story standpoint, so I'd give it a solid A minus. Maybe an A. I don't know. Probably A minus.
Okay. Good. I agree. I'd say Jordan Peele's just should be applauded for engaging with a topic that's really serious and deep and important, and but doing it in a really unique way. I don't personally know of a horror movie that just tackles race head on like this one. And to me, that's what's just kind of disappointing about the second half is I feel like something is lost when it turns into sort of the B-movie thrill ride. And I feel like the first half promises so much and the setup is perfect, but he can't quite land the plane in the second half. So I would say it's definitely still worth seeing if you've got the stomach for that sort of thing. It's interesting to watch once, but I do feel a little disappointed overall. I think I would give it a B, straight up B. So.
All right, man.
That's that.
We're gonna have to disagree on this one.
That's all right. It's good. We need more disagreement. Yeah. So there you have it, man. That's our first movie review of 2017.
Should they see this movie?
I think they should see it. I would definitely think it's a must see. And that is what the 99% of Rotten Tomatoes is telling you. At least it's worth seeing.
Take your small children.
No, definitely not.
All right, fair enough. But a good movie.
It's a good movie.
Maybe go a little earlier so you can have bring some friends, talk about it maybe. Mm-hmm. Say, hey, what did you think about this?
Do you know, Tim, I've been working on a horror movie script since college, and I've abandoned it like 5 years ago or something for this website. But my big idea was like, oh, I want to make a movie where you can really talk about, you know, where you can have like a come to Jesus moment, like a gospel presentation. This was back
through
when I was in college, but through a horror movie because they're so scared. And then you get to the end and they just want a little light and they don't even care how the light comes. So I'm going to get it all in there. Yeah.
Set him up.
So manipulative. And I was like 19. But anyway.
But don't you think that's interesting, though? John, I think you might be like, you know, a little bit like Jordan Peele here. Right?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I see a relation there.
You see that like social commentary, incredibly meaningful things can happen in this genre.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so don't, you know. Don't knock it.
Yes, right, exactly.
So I'll tell you this. I didn't expect this to be as good as it was, and I will soften on my stance against horror movies.
Okay, and watch It Follows.
Okay. We will see.
There is some really good subtext in there, too, actually. Yes.
Okay, all right.
There is. But anyway, so thanks for joining the discussion with us today. We'd love to get your feedback on Facebook or the comment section under our podcast on the website, or you can even do a comment on iTunes when you turn on the Apple robots by subscribing to our podcast and leaving us a short review. So please do that already. If you haven't, it helps us so much. Tim, always great talking film with you, my friend. And we'll see you guys next month. Keep the faith. We'll see you next time.